Good morning, I'm Adrian Wagner, and you're listening to Delta Affairs Weekly. On this week's episode, we'll be discussing Donlin Gold with General Manager Stan Fu, NovaGold President and CEO Greg Lang, and General Manager of parent company Barrick Gold, Andy Cole. Here's that interview.
Now, I'm new to Bethel myself. On the plane ride here, I heard two individuals talking, and they were talking about Donlin, and they were talking about the jobs that they wanted Donlin to bring to the area. What are we looking at?
My name is Stan Fu. I'm general manager with Donlin Gold, and we've been working in the region really for more than 20 years now. And as part of our commitment to Calista and the Kuskokwim Corporation, really, and the region, we are going to focus on hiring people from the region. And as we look forward to the project, assuming we get through permitting successfully, there will be about a four-year construction period where up to 3,000 jobs could be available through that four-year period. That would be the peak of employment. And then during the operating life of the mine, which would be, say, 27 and a half or more years, there would be a range of, say, from 600 to 1,200 jobs available. And once again, we are, and based on our track record, I think we've demonstrated a very strong commitment to local hire, and we would certainly be continuing that as we get into construction and operation of the mine.
And just to get a little bit more specific with that, what kinds of jobs are we seeing for locals? What sort of opportunities can we expect?
There's a broad array of employment opportunities we associate with a project like Donlin. First of all, you have the construction-type jobs, heavy equipment operation, in all facets of the construction project. There would be, as well as construction jobs, catering jobs, clerical jobs, accounting jobs. Certainly a lot of technical positions also that would be involved in the construction activities, but also through the operating life of the mine. We would hope, and we're currently encouraging and working with various entities in the region to promote people or students who are in, say, middle school and high school now to continue with their education, get a sound foundation of education, and then go on to vocational training or university training to look into those technical career opportunities.
What does that mean? You're working with high school and college students. You're giving out money, or you're sponsoring them. What exactly do you mean by that?
Well, we currently have commitments with Calista and the Kuskokwim Corporation to support their scholarship foundations, and we've been active in those since the inception of the agreements more than 20 years ago. We're also working closely with the Excel training program in the region, which encourages and helps foster talented high school students to go on to post high school training or education. And really all the workforce development initiatives that we've been working with throughout the state, not just in this region, but on a statewide basis to facilitate training for mining occupations, but also cross-industry training, partnering with oil and gas companies that are actively training as well, with maritime industry. Really, there's been a very good consortium of industries that have come together to provide training for the youth throughout the state. And our focus is trying to bring that to the YK region.
You can assure the YK region of how many jobs compared to the number of jobs that will be outsourced, that people will be brought in for?
Well, we would like to maximize the number of positions that would be filled by local residents. We really don't have a number that we've committed to, but really we're committed to maximizing the local hire. If you look back on our track record through the exploration programs we've had over the years, it's a very, very dramatic turnaround we saw. When we started out with very low local hire, we wound up turning that around to where we had 90% or better local hire. And that included not just entry-level positions, but supervisory positions as well through the exploration drilling programs. I'm sure many of your listeners have some experience working with us through those exploration years. And what we've learned is there is a very good talent base in the region with a lot of potential, and we're very optimistic of bringing in a large number of residents from the region to our workforce.
So there's also been some pushback in the region. Bethel City Council, for example, has asked for more time to study the draft EIS because it is so long. 5,000 pages is quite the document to take apart, especially if you're not trained in doing so. What do you think about that?
Well, we're certainly aware that the City Council has asked for additional time, and that's a decision that will be made by the Army Corps of Engineers. And whatever decision the Corps makes, we're certainly respectful that it's their right to grant an extension if they deem it necessary.
But you all have no input on that particular decision?
No, that's entirely up to the Corps of Engineers, and they will base their decision on the questions and the feedback that they get through the public comment period.
What kinds of comments are you all seeing just across the board? And any of you can answer this. And what are you paying attention to? What kinds of issues have stuck out to you that you'd like to respond to?
Well, the issues that have come up through the public comment period are very similar to the issues raised when we did the initial public scoping about 2 years ago. You know, the understandable concerns people have about the environmental impacts of the mine, the impacts of barging on the river, and does that impact the lifestyles? Those were all concerns that we expected to hear that have been analyzed and studied throughout the environmental impact statement.
I guess what I'm looking for is just some sort of confirmation that people's voices were heard in these meetings and that their concerns were paid attention to and addressed. Can any of you speak to that?
Sure. Permitting in the United States is a very open, very transparent, and a very public process. Everybody has the opportunity to comment both at the public meetings and through written correspondence. And we encourage everybody's participation in the public comment period. There are obviously going to be people that are supportive of the mine, and there's going to be people that are opposed to the mine. And it's the divergence of opinion that is very helpful and necessary for the Corps to reach an informed decision. So we welcome opinions both pro and con. We just encourage everybody to get out there and participate.
Yeah, well said, Greg. And Adrian, in addition to that, as Greg said, we think the public input has been very good and very helpful to the process. Whether it's supportive comments or comments with concerns, that does make for a better process and will make for a better EIS to make sure all those issues are addressed. But really, we've been in the region for a little more than 20 years now. And through that whole time, we've been reaching out to villages, communicating with residents of the region. And what I thought was great was that many people came into the comment meetings very well informed. And I think that adds to how well the comment period has been going, is that people have come in well-informed. They had their concerns that they wanted to make sure were addressed. They were able to restate those concerns. And I think the Corps and all the regulatory agencies will take those comments and review them and make sure that all questions are answered and that the EIS is very thorough. It's a very rigorous process. We've been at it now more than 3 years, about 3.5 years, probably still another year or two to go. So it's a very thorough process, and I think the public comment has been a very important part of making sure that is a very meaningful and rigorous process as it proceeds through the remaining time.
To zoom out a little bit, let's talk about Barrick Gold and its relation to the region. As we see it, we've talked a little bit about environmental impact, and we'd like to talk about what happened recently as recently as last year in September in Argentina, when quite a bit of cyanide solution was spilled into five rivers there. Workers at the mine were charged with negligence, and Barrick Gold was fined. Let's talk about what that could mean for this region and what we can do, or what you are doing, to prevent that from happening.
The first thing is Barrick is committed to building, operating, and closing mines in a safe and environmentally responsible manner. What happened in Argentina, as soon as that problem was recognized, the process was shut down. Very important to understand. As soon as it was identified, it was shut down and the authorities were notified. We worked very closely with the Argentinian authorities to make sure that any environmental damage was understood and assessed. As soon as the spill happened, we started taking samples and took samples for months afterwards, showing no impact to any of the residents downstream. After the incident happened, we went through and conducted a very deep root cause analysis of what went wrong, and implemented all of the recommendations out of that. So again, most importantly, our top priority is operating a safe mine, safe for our employees, safe for the communities that we work in and around, and safe for the environment.
So that mine in Argentina is now closed?
No, it's still in operation. We've worked very closely with the authorities. We resolved the problems that caused the spill, and that's what Barrick does whenever there's an issue. We work to solve it and work very hard to make sure we can prevent reoccurrence. It is back in operation and running with the approval of the authorities in Argentina.
What's changed? What has been done there to prevent this from happening again?
There was a very long list of remedial actions that were put in place, both from human intervention, checklist, observations, rounds that are being done. There were some engineering changes, there were some procedural changes, and then there were some equipment changes and some instrumentation changes to ensure that a spill like that won't happen again.
Let's talk about the decision to go with the pipeline. That's going to take 2 years to build and will last for 30 years. What will happen after that?
Well, the pipeline, assuming we're successful in the permitting process, will be part of the project and part of the construction process, and should take probably three to 4 years, same as the construction period, to complete. It is designed to supply power to the work site. It's a 14-inch diameter all-steel line, essentially buried the entire 315-mile route, except for, I think, two fault crossings just because of tectonic concerns. All up to code, all up to the rigorous standards that are required. And although it is permitted and will be permitted for the mine life, it'll be really we'll only be using half the capacity of the line. So should local entities see opportunities to utilize the other half, they'll certainly have the right and it'll be available to them to supply gas to the region. That being said, we understand that is a expensive endeavor, but we're open to working with any entities that can utilize that extra capacity. As far as the life of the pipeline, from our standpoint, assuming no further use of the line, there may be a requirement to reclaim it when it's done. However, if there is a useful purpose, both during and after our mine life, that would have to be taken into consideration by the agencies. It would probably be an agency decision on what happens after the mine closes, whether or not it could be utilized or not.
Thank you for listening to Delta Affairs Weekly, and we hope you tune in again next week. For KYUK, I'm Adrian Wagner.